Hello, and welcome. Welcome once again to the Start, Scale, and Succeed podcast, the only podcast that grows with you through all seven stages of your journey as a founder. And today we have a great episode for all you founders out there who find yourself asking the question, what's wrong with these people? Yep, I've been there too. You create a ton of success as an entrepreneur, as a solopreneur. And what is the reward? You wake up, it's usually like on a Monday morning after you've spent the whole weekend cleaning up everyone else's messes and doing their work for them, when you realize you've become a manager. And let's be honest, that's the last thing that you wanted when you started this whole thing. So if that's you, today's guest, Tim Stout, has 50 fight to win tactics that are going to help your business succeed in his book, Forged in Fire. And he's here with us today to discuss somewhere up to, we'll see how far we can get with this, but five of my very favorite chapters from his book. And with over 35 years of experience in combat sports and 22 years in business, Tim draws on his extensive experience to offer practical fight-to-win techniques for anyone ready to elevate their journey. He designed his insights on personal accountability, goal setting, overcoming setbacks to help entrepreneurs, leaders, and dreamers to transform their limitations into achievement. He's here with us today. Tim, I'm excited to have you on the show. I really enjoyed the book, Forged with Fire. Just for those who obviously haven't had the chance to hear about it, as many of it's going to be the first time they've heard of it. But tell us a little bit about the book. What problem did you hope it would solve for your readers, and why did you write it?
Hey, Scott, appreciate that introduction. That was amazing, by the way. The Forged in Fire was I've grew and scaled several businesses, and it's simple tactics, because when I find myself when I'm doing these things, there's lessons that I can relate, that something that happened as a kid. We grew up, you know, super poor, Appalachia, East Tennessee. You know, I had there's five boys, two girls, mom and dad in an 800 square foot house. So wow. Lots of love, great family, but super poor. Lessons that I pulled from that, and then as a, you know, professional athlete for a decade, there's lessons that I learned in the cage, you know, in the weight room, in the gym. And it's just the little lessons that, like, when I find myself building the businesses, that it's the lessons that I learned there. The same lessons relate to the same lessons in business. Mm-hmm. And it was just a good reminder that it doesn't matter if you're a startup or if you're scaling for a big merger, it's the same problems. It's just the level of that problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. So I'm wondering if we could dive into a couple chapters that that really stood out to me. So there's 50 of them. There's a ton of great content in there. Again, highly recommend the book. But we're going to pick and choose a little from some of my favorites. So first one that jumped out to me was chapter 4. And chapter 4 is Pick Up the Broom. And so in this chapter, you emphasize leading by example. The question that I have for you is, one, you can set up what picking up the broom means for us, but then, like, practically, how do visionary leaders model execution for their team? And maybe even how do they know when to pick up the broom and when to hand it off?
Okay. That one comes from, I'm a big fan of lead by example. When I was fighting, I had a few rules, and I have outgrew these rules. Like, I am mentally beyond these rules. But a lot of the rules were, if you couldn't outlift me, don't tell me how to lift weights. Mm. If you can't outbox me, don't tell me how to box. If you can't out grapple me, don't tell me how to grapple, because everybody has their opinion. So the people that I listened to were the people who could, you know, the boxers I listened to were the ones that could beat me up. The grapplers, the ones who could submit me, the ones that are stronger than me. That's the ones I listened to. So when I stepped into leadership roles, and even before I started, you know, entrepreneurship, I ran businesses. I ran gyms. I ran detention centers. I was a manager. So I did that at a pretty high level. And I realized real quick, me included, I didn't respond well to someone telling me to do something who hasn't did it or wouldn't do it. Mm. But the ones that would tell me, like, they tell me to sweep, you know, pick up the broom, they were the ones I saw the day before sweeping.
Yeah.
So there's no reluctancy. There was no animosity for him to say that to me. I would just do it.
Yeah.
And when I lead, it's the same thing. Like, it's the floor. If the floor needs sweeping, I don't have a higher producing activity to do, I'll do it. Trash needs taken out, and I don't have a higher dollar producing activity to do, I'll do it. And that has caused it's a pretty good culture that when people see that and they mimic it and follow your lead.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. You mentioned kind of the boundaries, not the right word for that, but how to choose when to do it. And you said a higher income producing activity. How do you personally figure that out? Because a lot of this is happening in real time. Is that a conscious decision, or is it just like an intuitive cultural decision?
It's conscious, but it's something that, I think about. It's like, what is my highest dollar producing activity? Because like last time I moved, like I told my wife, I'm not cutting grass. I mean, I'm worth, $500 an hour. I'm not cutting grass. I'm not doing this. I named all the things that I'm not doing. Yep. Because my highest dollar producing activity is when I'm on the phone, when I'm prospecting for business, because I do really well there, face to face and on the phone, I do really well. So what I would do, I started off with, I drew a pie chart, like it's like a pizza, and everything was in the pizza that had my each job. And I assigned a dollar activity to that job. Like my administrator would make $20 an hour. The person doing, contracts would make $25 an hour and all these things. And as I grew in the business, I would hire that lowest dollar producing activity because it was the cheapest one. But I would hire someone in there. I wouldn't replace, if I had a medium pie chart, if I replaced like an administrator assistant, it would be a large slice that would go in it. They would do it better than I was. That was their thing. And that would give me back 3 to 4 hours a day to prospect for my highest dollar producing activity. So if I'm worth $500 an hour and I'm paying someone $20 an hour, not only am I making that $500 an hour, I'm making the $480 because I'm doing that instead of that for those hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until I work the whole chart.
Yeah. Fantastic. And that kind of brings us to the next chapter I wanted to dive into. This is chapter 11 in the book, where you say saying yes means saying no. And for founders, especially at this stage where there's this change that happens where you go from everything you do, you have to do it. And you're just fighting for opportunity, right? So like anytime you actually get an opportunity, the answer is almost unequivocally yes. Like as long as it's legal, ethical, and remotely close to your industry, you're like, yes. It's like, can I finish the sentence? No, we're good. Let me just help you. You do that long enough and you start to build a reputation. You figure out the stuff that works. You find out what you like to say yes to. And one of the real big challenges is you're not fighting to get opportunities to say yes as much as you're having to exercise the discipline of saying no. And so I love this concept of saying yes means saying no. So for that founder who's just, overwhelmed isn't the right word, but just sees all the opportunities ahead of them, how do they know what to say yes to now?
Like when you say, and I would ask them to reframe their brain. When you say yes to something, you're saying no to something. So what exactly are you saying no to? Because everybody wants to say yes, but what are you saying no to? But to directly answer that question, I think it was Alex Hormozi that said it, that the hardest part about being an entrepreneur is saying no to the good ideas so you can execute on the great ideas. And with me, and I've flipped. I mean, I've bought franchises. I've built businesses from ground up. I've been partners. And I realize now, been in the business for a while, exactly what my strengths are. And I say yes to things that I can vertically integrate with that strength. If I have to go out a little bit, I either hire that out or I don't do it. But I say yes to things that are in my wheelhouse. It's everybody has their strengths. I think two of the biggest things about being an entrepreneur is you need to know your strengths. And even more importantly, you need to know your weaknesses. My weaknesses, I chase shiny objects. Like I quit doing it about 4 years ago, but I run them down. And, for the thought of something or the idea of something. And then I realized that's not my strength. My strength is building real estate businesses. If it's investing, if it's mortgage, if it's real estate sales, whatever it is. And my businesses I've said yes to are the vertical integration ones, the title, the mortgage. It's the ones I can build off top of that because my strength is building that business.
Right. Right. That's so good. Hi there, this is Scott. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to get back to the show in just a few seconds, but first, I wanted to let you know about my brand new Founders Evolution Quiz. If you're a founder, business owner, or CEO who feels overworked by the business you lead and underwhelmed by the results you're getting, you're doing it wrong. Succeeding as a founder all comes down to doing the right one or two things for right now. So take the quiz today at founderquiz.com. Again, that's founderquiz.com. And in just 10 questions, you can figure out what stage you're in so you can focus on what's going to work and say goodbye to everything else. Now, back to the show. The second aspect of this that I think is challenging for folks at this stage is knowing how much to say yes to, right? And this comes down to a few things, but one of them is just how hard can you push your team? And you talk about this actually in a couple of different chapters, but how do you know how much to say yes to?
I guess it depends on you, depends on your team, and depends on your goal. For me, I'm a worker. I mean, I was at the office at 6 a.m. I work 12 hours, and I do that most days. Like, I love to work. I love to build. Like, do I go on a vacation? I still want to work. It's hard for me to pull away from work to do a, we just went on a, like a Mediterranean cruise for 2 weeks, and it was very enjoyable, but it drove me crazy because I really enjoy working. So, but one thing I realized, you know, I have multiple businesses. My wife has multiple businesses, and I tell her all the time, in the beginning, especially when this book was written and I first started building businesses, you expect everyone to act like you. You expect everyone to do like you do. And I guess 5 or 6 years ago, I was talking to my wife, had a realization. It's like, people like us don't need us. Mm-hmm. So we're working with people who are not like us. So we can't have the same expectations, because the only thing that comes from an expectation is to be upset with somebody. So I've had to really understand, I had to lower my expectations, because most people are not going to want to work 12 hours. Most people don't want to sell, you know, 300 houses a year like I do. So I have to find that medium. Mm. Did that answer the question?
It did. And it opens up a question that I had with chapter 33. And so there's a couple here I want to unpack, but how do you, because I couldn't agree more. I think one of the biggest challenges for very high achieving founders is that they kind of use themselves as the litmus test, right? How much management does this employee need? Well, how much management would I want? How much can that employee get done in a day? Well, how much could I do? And like you said, people like us don't need us. And so that, I don't think that's a fair assessment, but then what is? So how do you, in this idea of no bad staff, only bad leaders, how can you use that to become the leader that the people who need you need, right? How do you become the person that gets the most out of those team members?
And when I wrote that chapter, it was based off of a lot of people, you know, Extreme Ownership was a newer book, and that was, it was on fire. People love that. And I've worked with a lot of leaders who they like to play the blame game. And then I break it down. I'm like, well, who hired that person? It's like, you hired that person. It's your fault. You either had a bad hire, or you got a bad training process. One of the two is happening, and you have to accept responsibility on either one of them or both of them. And so everything that can happen is, my life really changed when I started to really do the extreme ownership. It's like, this is my fault. And then I had to break it down to why it was my fault and what the, I wouldn't say the solution, but what the fix is. How do I keep from doing this again? And I think that process has helped build me as a leader, because it's, people are not going to work as hard as we do, rarely. And when we do, especially in my industry, they don't stick around long. They come in, they learn what you do, and they're like, why am I splitting my commission with him? Mm. And they can go off and do it on their own.
Right. And
sometimes they're successful. Most of the time they're not. But sometimes they are.
Mm. And when it comes to another one of these management functions, so let's say we've got the right people in, we've figured that out, we've set them up for the right hiring, we've set them up for the right training. It doesn't necessarily end there, right? There's this ongoing process of keeping them in peak performance. And a big part of that is accountability. So how do you make sure that you're managing appropriately, not too much, not too little? How do you navigate that?
I think an expectation talk, when I bring on a, say I bring on an agent, an expectation talk of what's required. And with me, you could, because everybody's about KPIs. And I think KPIs are very important. But we both know people, or have had people who work for us, who hit all their KPIs, but they don't produce. And so my number one metric is sales. How many sales can you get? If you are not getting your sales, you have to hit all your KPIs over here. Because the law of math tells me, if you hit your KPIs long enough, you start to get production. And if you don't, it's an issue with someone else.
Right.
You know, not, it's an issue with the salesperson. So it allows me to know what to do. But I do the KPIs, and I find out, you know, intimately what they're wanting out of life. And I can usually attach it to a monetary figure. There's very few things that money doesn't fix in someone's life. You know, everybody's like, I want freedom. Money gives you freedom. Like, it's, I want to have weekend lake house. Money gives you that. Like, money gives you this. So if I can attach that to the result. And, you know, we can break it down on what they need to make. Mm. That usually helps because it's less me holding them accountable and me just holding them accountable to their own goals. And it's not me being the boss that's trying to be greedy and stuff.
Got it. Good. Good. So, Tim, there's this question that I like to ask all my guests. I'm interested to see what you have to say. And the question is this: what would you say is the biggest secret that you wish wasn't a secret at all? What's that one thing you wish everybody watching or listening today knew?
For life, and especially for businesses, whatever you want to do has been done before. Find the mentor, find the person who's did it, read the books, watch the videos, hire the coach, and do it just as they done it. And I've done it, and I've seen so many other people, they want to blaze their own trail, but it's been blazed before. Like, find out who blazed it, how they blazed it, what they would change different. Like, I'm a big fan of coaches. Like, I have multiple coaches. I hired a new coach yesterday, and I've already got multiple coaches I coach with. And I want to improve the aspects of my life, but I'm not going to, like, I hired the Black Swan Group with Chris Voss. I'm not going to study all the books about negotiating when I can go straight to the source of someone who's did it at the highest level. Like, I can take away 5 years of my life and learn it in 6 months. Mm. And so it's been done before. So quit trying to blaze your own path and just learn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's you can try and do it alone, but you can do it a lot faster with the help of others, and reduce so many of the potential pitfalls. So, Tim, there's so much of this book that we haven't had a chance to unpack here, but I know that it's resonating with some folks. They want to know where they can find out more. So, two questions: where can they find the book? And second, if they want to know more about the work that you do or connect with you directly, how can they do that?
It's on Amazon. I had one here. It's on Amazon. So just Forged in Fire, 55 to Win Tactics. That's the best place to get it. For me, Facebook, Tim Stout, and Instagram, The Tim Stout. I do a mix of, like, for especially my Facebook. I've got a huge following on Facebook, but I have self-defense videos from my fighting career. I do real estate. I do investing. Like, it's, I know a lot of people say you shouldn't mix, you know, your genres on your social media, but I've got 425,000 followers, and it's, and everybody falls in line, loves all of it. So
fantastic. Yeah. Well, we'll be sure to check that out. We'll get all the links to that in the show notes. So whatever your favorite channel is, you'll be able to find Tim there. Tim, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for the book and what you've shared with all of us. Those tactics are phenomenal and folks are really going to benefit from it. So it's a privilege and honor having you on the show. Thanks for being here. For those of you watching and listening, you know your time and attention mean the world to us. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I know I did, and I cannot wait to see you next time. Take care. Scott Ritzheimer here. Thank you so much for listening to the Start, Scale, and Succeed podcast. I hope this episode gave you exactly what you need for your stage right now. If you want to discover what stage you're in, take our 10-question Founders Evolution quiz for free at founderskiz.com. That's founderskiz.com. It'll pinpoint exactly where you are and give you tailored tips to move forward and reach that next level in your journey as a founder. If you got something out of today's episode, would you do us a favor and share it on social media? Just grab a quick screenshot on your phone, text it to a friend, or post it on your favorite platform. Tag us and use hashtag StartScaleSucceed. I'd love to see your posts. You can also head over to scalearchitects.com/podcast to check out more episodes tagged by your stage so you can focus on what matters most right now. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review. It helps us to reach more founders like you, and it means a ton to me and my team. So let's keep starting, scaling, and succeeding together. I'll see you in the next episode.